So we've been in a, we're in a series on the book of Judges, so we're going to be back there this morning. And I was here last week, I'm preaching again this week. Next week, Todd's going to be up here. You're going to see some of us. You may or may not know this, if you've been with us for a while, you may know this, but Matt, during the month of July, takes the month off from teaching, from preaching, and he really focuses on the series that are going to be happening the rest of the next year, or this year and next year, and just kind of works on his sermon series for a little while, which is great because it gives us a chance, so maybe you don't get to hear from as much, be up here, and we learn a ton from Matt. We all have our different style when we come up, so I hope you enjoy this month of July. Don't check out on us. I think you'll find some of us funny. We learn a lot, but also it's really cool when you can hear from different people because God speaks through different people in different ways. And so I think when you get opportunity to hear people teach, different folks teach, it's really, I love this about LifePoint, you get to hear different perspectives. And the sermons we all work on together throughout the week, and then whoever's teaching that week takes kind of point on the discussion and the study time, and they kind of craft the message together. And so you're going to get to hear some different folks over the next few weeks. But Matt will be back with us again starting in August. Now, in this book, we've kind of got to a place last week where we talked about how that God had put enemies in place to test the generations after Joshua. All right, Joshua's kind of generation is gone, and Israel is being tested by the enemies that God is allowing to be in place. And we realize that God was doing that because he wanted the people to be able to fight. He wanted them to understand warfare. He wanted them to trust him and be able to fight the fight that they needed to. He wanted them to not grow soft or complacent. And what we're going to find in the book of Judges past this point is we're going to look at a bunch of individual stories where people are fighting, where God calls someone out into a conflict, into an opportunity, calls them out into a fight, and they have to step up and accomplish something great. And so we're going to take that and we're going to begin to learn from those. And this morning, you know, as we talk about that, I want to do something to get started. First thing that's kind of different. I don't need that, I don't think. That's kind of different. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take out a pen, all right? I want everybody to find a pen, or if you don't have pen or paper, I want you to get your phone and go to your notes section, whichever way you want to do it, all right? However, so I'm going to give you a second, figure that out. You can look for a pen in front of you, or you can write on the back of one of these cards, or you can put it on your phone, however you want to do it. Because I want you to write down a few things this morning, all right? In fact, I'm going to want you to write down six things. So if you're like me, I'll kind of go ahead and number things. I go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you feel good if I do that. So if you want to do that, you can. And then here's the thing, I want you to write down six things. And there's going to be two, all right? So the first two I want you to write down is this. I want you to write down two difficulties that you're facing, all right? Two difficulties. Now this could be a financial difficulty. It could be any kind of struggle you're going through. It could be health related. It could be job related. You know, there's no limit. It's just two difficulties. So number one is a difficulty. Number two is a difficulty. Okay? And those are all different, and we all have different ones. And it could be kind of a really big thing. It could be a small thing, but just something you know you're facing currently. All right? So now number three and four, I want you to write down two opportunities. Okay? Two opportunities. Now this could, again, could be like you have opportunity to coach your kid's soccer team. It could be you have opportunity at work. It could be you have opportunity in ministry. It could be any kind of opportunity you have. You know, somebody could have like said, hey, you want to come, you know, over our house to eat this next weekend? Any kind of opportunity. But I want you to write down two opportunities that just kind of pop in your mind this morning at the beginning. And the last two blanks are this. I want you to write down two people that you need to talk to. And what I mean by that is not necessarily, it could be like someone that you've had some issue with that you really know you need to resolve and talk to. But it could also be maybe that person that you know you should have tried to call and encourage at some point and you just hadn't got around to it. Whoever, just two people that you know that you need to talk to. All right, now that you got that, we're going to hold on to it. We're going to just come back to it throughout this message. Because we're talking about fight, and there's kind of a fight that dwells in all of these. But, I'm thinking about fight. And last week, I talked to you guys, if you remember, we're talking about how much rain we've got. Never remember that? We talked about how much rain, and if you really love rain, you go out in rain, and how we say we love rain, but we really don't love rain, right? And I kind of mentioned that I've been trying to bush hog this field behind my house. See, my neighbor, single lady, has a tractor and a bush hog, but she needs somebody to bush hog it. And I'm like, sure, I'll do this, and I'm going to bush hog this field. And I didn't realize at the time, even as I was saying this last week, how much of a battle this is going to be. I wake up this morning and look out on that field and just realize, like, I'm getting beat by this field, okay? This is what happened this week. Tuesday, I decide to go out and to get some of this bush hog. It's in between one of our random thunderstorms that just show up at any moment of time and totally drop like 17 gallons of water on you, just randomly, you know, those happen. And it's in between them, and I'm out there, and I'm getting some done, and I'm like, just, you know, this is great, I'm getting it, I just make a few laps, and all of a sudden, the left fender just starts shaking, all right? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I've torn something up, and they've told me a few things that can happen, so I immediately stop, and I'm looking at the bush hog, I'm seeing if anything back there has gone wrong, and I look to my left, and I look down, and the rear left tire is flat, all right? I'm in the middle of a field that's kind of wet, and the rear tire is flat. I'm talking about a little bit flat. I'm talking about like the wheel is sitting on the ground of the tractor, okay? So I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to get this tire changed. So I start going through the process of getting a tire changed, okay? It's 4th of July. This is how I spent my 4th. So I start thinking about it, and it's evening, so I'm not going to get changed. We're taking the kids to watch fireworks, so I know it's my Wednesday is going to be spent on changing this tractor tire. I don't know if you've ever picked up a tractor tire, but they're very, very heavy. This tractor tire is tall as me. It's one of these big old tires, huge tire. And so first, my dad gives me all this wood. He's like, you're going to have to jack it up. He's working the next day, but I'm over his house Tuesday night. You're going to have to jack it up. So take this floor jack that weighs 17,000 pounds. So I put it in the back of a truck. Take all this wood. You're going to need these cinder blocks. So take these 4 cinder blocks. And I pull the truck up to it Wednesday, and I begin what becomes the great journey of my Wednesday, taking cinder blocks and walking them all the way out in the middle of this field to jack up this tractor, right? Then I have to carry this floor jack all the way out in the middle of this field to jack up this tractor. I have to take all this wood. And it's just this battle that's going on. And so we jack it up. Take the wheel off. That's not an easy thing. Roll the wheel over to the truck. Pick it up. Put it in the back of the truck. It fills the whole truck bed. It's just a huge tire. We get it back, and I get Matt and Nick right over there with me, and we go put it back on. And it's just this kind of whole day thing. Like, you're just beat, you know? But the next day, it was kind of cool, because Thursday evening, I went out, and I was like bush hogging. And it was one of those times when sun was setting, I was going to bush hog to dark, and all the colors were in the sky, you know, and it was just beautiful. And I was thinking, man, I hadn't done this in long. You know, I was raised on a farm. We had a tractor, 13 acres. We mowed with a tractor. I mean, you couldn't mow with a regular lawnmower. You had to use a tractor to mow. So I'd done that before, but living in the city since I left home, and just to do that again was reminiscent. It was fun. I was just praying. It was good. So I got a pretty good bit done. And then this weekend, I told my wife Friday, I worked with a friend of mine on Friday, and then I said, you know what, tomorrow, talking about yesterday, Saturday, I said, I'm just going to have a relaxing day. Like, we're going to get up and just relax and not do anything too strenuous. Just have one of those nice, relaxing, resting days. So I like sleep to 9 o'clock. Like, my kids slept at 9 o'clock. It never happens. Like, I'm usually like a 5:30 guy. I sleep to 9 o'clock. I get up. I take my time getting my shower, you know, and just sitting there with nothing to do. I'm like, you know what, Audrey? I'm just going to get the tractor and just do a couple rounds out there in the field, you know? So I go out there to get on the tractor, and the first thing, it won't crank. I'm like, oh, okay. And it's an old tractor. It's a Ford 4000 old tractor, and the battery in it, the connector has been, like, severed, and they have it, like, with a screw that's, like, you screw on this connector, and it connects this battery. I don't know a lot about mechanics. I want to just admit that right now. Because some of you are going to laugh at this next part. But I didn't know if you could touch that and not get shocked if you're just touching one side of the battery, which I do know you can do that now, by the way. So at the time I'm trying to reconnect this thing, I'm like trying my best to like screw it on real fast in case I get shocked, like I won't like get stuck to it, you know? So I'm like, lean over the tractor, try to screw it real fast, and like, then it's getting away, and it just keeps falling off, and I'm like trying to get it on. So I finally get it on there. I'm not electrocuted. I'm happy. I get the tractor crank, and I go out, and I make one loop, all right, and everything's great. It's a little wet down toward the bottom. I just power right through, make a second loop, everything's great. Third loop comes around, and I get in the bottom, and I don't know if I hit a swamp or a cistern of water or a hole, but I bury the back two tires. Like, I'm not talking about I kind of just start creeping. I'm talking about I'm going, everything's good, and then boom, boom, water just starts spinning beside me, like waterfall. Like, and then you freak out, so you're like, oh, ah. And then you try to put it in reverse, and just spinning stuff in reverse, and then the bush hog's buried back there, and I can't do anything. So then I just turn it off, and you sit there. What'd I do? So like now I try to turn it back on, and it won't crank, and I like reach over, I'm buried in mud. I reach over and open the hood, and the battery things come back off, and now I'm like, I'm standing in water. I still don't know if I can get electrocuted at this point, right? So now I'm standing in water, trying to like get it, not like, I feel like I'm about to die, and I get it and turn it back on. I go back up to the truck that's still in my house, and I get the wood that I used to jack up the tractor, and now I'm digging and trying to bury wood underneath the tires of the tractor. It won't go. I mean, I get so mad. I hit the thing, this big metal tractor, of course. I hit it with my hand, like, that's going to do something. I'm like, get out of this hole. Hurt my finger. Like, I'm so frustrated. And like, at some point, I just sit there and go, I don't know what to do. Like, I guess I'm just going to sit here and be mad, or go back to the house and wait until this thing dries up, like 2 weeks from now, and then come drive it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I finally called a friend who had a winch on the back of his truck, and he came out, and we winched it out, and we finally got the thing out, and there's huge holes down there. And I very promptly, as we winched it out, and I got it cranked, just drove that thing right back over to the shed, parked it, and walked right back to my house. But I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, you know what? If that morning, if Saturday morning, yesterday morning, I would have knew that was what was going to happen if I would drove that tractor. I don't know that I would have done that day. Yeah? And I think that sometimes it's that fear that keeps us from doing anything. I think it's the fear that we of thinking what could go wrong or what could happen that's bad that keeps us from engaging in any fight. We play in our head so many times all the bad possibilities that could take place. And so we find ourselves doing nothing. You know, and I think it's what's happened because of that is that we've kind of created a culture that finds itself very passive these days. We have a very passive culture. In this story we're going to look at, we see kind of passivity played out. And I really think that passivity is poisoning our culture. I mean, I think it runs so deep. I brought this up here this morning because to me, this is like shows everything of passivity in my life. Like, this is the how I know it runs deep in my life. This is natural mango essence sparkling water. I don't even know what mango essence means. Somehow they got the essence of mango and put it in this sparkling water. Yay for them. I try not to drink very much soda. And so this is like soda replacement for me. It's calorie free, sweetener free, sodium free. Sounds like a great thing, doesn't it? But it's like carbonated water, pretty much. And here's why I think this shows the passivity in my life, because I can't tell you how many times I have one of these, maybe at night, sitting before I'm going to bed, maybe I'm reading a book, maybe I'm sitting in my chair reading a book, or I'm watching TV, and I'm drinking one of these before I go to bed. And the next morning, I wake up and it's sitting on the same table where I left it the night before. And how many of my times my wife has said, Quinn, can you pick up your can? And I don't do it. And it's not because I can't. Like, it's a very easy thing for me to pick up the can and walk the 20 yards to my garbage can and drop it in it, right? It's a really easy thing. But in my head, we think this, somebody else will do that. If I leave it there, somebody else will do it. And can I tell you, that's what passivity looks like in our lives. We have a culture that is saying, you know what, I ain't got to take care of anything because somebody else is going to do it. Now, I don't have to step into that conflict or that area of struggle or that fight because somebody else will step into it. We see it, I mean, we live in a culture where, you know, it used to be if somebody's going to break up with you, the really bad way when I was like in middle school was if they broke up with you, they like broke up with you through a letter, right? They hand wrote you a letter and then they gave it to you and their friend gave it to you. And like, why is her friend give me a letter? Because they were breaking up with you, right? And then you'd write a letter back and say, give this to her. I'll show her. And you'd say something like, I was going to break up with you anyway. And you weren't. You weren't going to break up with them anyway. But you got to save face. And now we have people who end relationships through text message. They pick up a device, send a text, end a relationship. We're just passive. Somebody could be offended. Somebody could be like, man, so-and-so didn't talk to me at church today. And you could feel really bad about that. And that person could go home and instead of saying, you know what, saying the person's name, Quentin didn't talk to me at church today, they might go home and put a post like this. Man, I really can't stand it when you go to church and the pastor doesn't talk to you. I mean, it's just passivity. We say something general because we don't want to step into the conflict of the specific. When we have people who live their whole life, and if you looked at their life on Facebook, they would look like Facebook heroes. But in real life, every day, they feel like zeros because they're just passive. They're not stepping into any of the difficult things in life, but they just are projecting things. And see, I feel like we as believers are called to not be passive. We're called to be very active and engaged. We're called to step into the hard place. We're called to step into the difficulties in our life, to walk through them. We're called to step into the opportunities of our life and walk through them. We're called to step into the conversations of our life and walk through them. And as we look at the scripture this morning, I think we're going to see that example played out. So if you have your Bible, you want to turn, we're going to be in chapter 4 of Judges. Chapter 4. It says this in verse 1. And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud died. Ehud was one of the guys from chapter 3. He was before Shamgar, we talked about last week, but he was one of the judges, kind of a hero of the faith. It said, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. Then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help, for he had 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the people of Israel cruelly for 20 years. Now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at the time. So let me kind of set this up. We see this, what's happened is Ehud's gone, he was a judge, and now there's this king who's kind of took over, and he's used this one specific general named Sisera. And the reason Sisera is so powerful is because Sisera has these chariots of iron. And these chariots, when they go into battle, would just overwhelm their enemies. They'd overwhelm Israel. The chariots would, you know, they would hide behind the chariots. They would duck down the chariots. They would just run through people. They were offensive, defensive weapons. They were able to be very mobile. It was causing Israel all kind of fits. So they've been under this oppression for years at this point, and now we see Deborah has become the new judge. Deborah was a prophet. She had some, God would speak through Deborah, and Deborah now became the judge of Israel. If we look at verse 6, it says, she sent and summoned Barak, the son, She sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinom, from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand. So Deborah comes up with this plan to kind of free them from Sisera, free them from this king, free them from Sisera's chariots, all right? And her plan is, she had this guy named Barak, and she's going to get Barak, and Barak was going to take his troops out, 10,000 of them, and they were going to go and fight, all right? They were going to go fight Sisera and his chariots. And Deborah says, I'll go draw Sisera out. If you get your troops together and go where I tell you to be, I'll be the one to make sure and draw Sisera out. And I'll have Sisera in the very place you need to have him to go to war. Verse 8. And Barak says to her, "If you'll go with me, I will go. But if you'll not go with me, I will not go." And she said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory. For the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. You know, it's crazy what happens right here, because understand what takes place. Man, I think we see this in life so much. This opportunity arises. This difficulty arises. And Deborah instructs Barak, and here's kind of what you need to do. Here's the steps you need to take. You need to engage in this, Barak. You need to step into this. And Barak's response is interesting, but not foreign to us. Barak says, "If you'll go with me, I'll go. But if you're not going to go, I'm not doing this." And I just think, man, how much does that sound like us today in our culture? We feel maybe God leading us to do something, or we see an opportunity, or we see a need. And instead of us stepping into that opportunity or into that need or into that struggle, we go, "Well, God, if you make this happen, then I'll fill that gap, or I'll step into it. You know, if you'll help my financial situation, then maybe I'll help this person, other person who's struggling. God, if you'll give me someone to walk with me through this, I'll go. But if you don't, God, I can't do it." And we start putting all these limits and limitations, all these conditions on what God's called us to do, all these conditions on these fights that present themselves. And the problem in this is that obedience is not conditional, right? God doesn't say, "I want you to obey me. I want you to be able to do the things I've called you to do as long as I meet your standards." God calls us to obedience and calls us to step into the issues of our life, into the fights, into the conflicts, into the conversations. He's called us to do that without looking for him to meet our conditions. In fact, we shouldn't even be creating conditions. We do. You know, I think that our culture, sometimes we, when it comes to the mission and ministry and the gospel, we'll say, "You know what? I'll share something. I'll help that person. I'll tell that person about Jesus. If you create the opportunity, God, you create the opportunity." I don't even know what that means, really. Because today, if we woke up and we were breathing, and we have breath, and we can speak, then we have opportunity. We have opportunity. Now, this goes on. So here's the deal. It's set up, right? If you look now in verse 14, we kind of skip to the battle taking place. Verse 14 says, "And Deborah said to Barak, 'Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you?' So Barak went down from the Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot." All right, so the battle starts. Barak versus Sisera. All right? This is the big battle that takes place. Deborah says it's time. But here's the thing, we see this and and it says they routed them, they win. But here's the thing that's got to be in the back of Barak's mind. And here's the thing that should stick out in ours. Is that just a few scriptures before, when he says, "You know what, I can't do this unless you go with me," Deborah says, "You know what, I'm going to go. I'm going to go. But because of the path you've chosen, because of the road you're choosing to go down, you'll not see the glory." Says, "You're going to win, but you won't see the glory." And this is kind of confusing to me, because, right, like, we kind of sometimes think glory is a bad thing. Like, we shouldn't try to gain glory. And I want to kind of put this in context, because she's saying this negatively. She's saying, "Barak, you have an opportunity here to gain some glory." And here's what I think she's telling him, is you have an opportunity to do something that's going to leave a legacy. And you're going to lose that because you're trying to put conditions on your obedience. I love, there's a movie called The Replacements. It's a football movie. I like football movies because I play football. Anybody ever watch The Replacements, old football movie? There's a line in there I love that's a bit chauvinistic, and it's not the chauvinistic part I like about it, but it says this. It says that it's like, you know, they're at the fourth quarter, and there are these old guys trying to replace these football players, and they're all beat up, and this quarterback gets in the huddle, and he looks at them, and he's like, "You know, we've got to make this touchdown." He goes, "Guys, just remember this. Wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory is forever. Right? And what he's saying in that moment is, this may cost us, we may hurt, this is going to be hard, but if we do something great, people are going to talk about this. We will be remembered for what's taking place here. And see, when you wrote down those difficulties, those opportunities, and those conversations, can I tell you, those are the type of things that your name will be remembered for. Because the truth is, the Bible says that our days are numbered, that God knows our days. He's got it figured out how long we're going to live. I may not live much longer. You may not. We don't know. We may all live to be really old. Who knows? I hope God has us here for a while. But this is the truth. What we do from this day until that day determines what kind of legacy we leave. And how you walk through the difficulties that you face. Man, can I tell you, I've been, when the people walk through difficult situations and they stay close to God and they fight the battle in that difficult situation, man, that is a legacy that we learn from. When people step into opportunities that cause them risk, that they know that there's a risk involved and they step into it, they're leaving a legacy. And when you have conversations with people that you know you should be having conversations with, you'll leave a legacy in their lives. And there are people that just need someone to call and encourage them, that need them to be on their team. And you will leave a legacy in those people's lives. When we begin to realize that our obedience to walk in, to share the gospel, to do missions, to go through these hard situations, it is what begins to leave a legacy for us. It changes how we live. So Barak wins, though, right? He wins. And then here's the interesting part, because here's where I think we can learn about passivity. It's not from Barak's story. We see Barak being passive, but we're going to see a lady named Jael, and she's going to take the bull by the horns. She's going to handle a situation. And I love it. So let's read about this. Verse 17. It says, "But Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. And Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, 'Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, do not be afraid.' So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug." So here's kind of what's happening. Sisera gets away from the chariots. Barak and his troops are following after the chariots. They're trying to destroy all the guys on the chariots. And Sisera runs a different direction. And Sisera goes to a place, there's this tent of this tribe that's supposed to be neutral, that he knows, okay, they're kind of neutral in this battle, they're not in this fight, and so he's going toward that. And when he gets there, Jael runs out to him, sees Sisera, and goes, Jael goes, "Hey, come turn aside in here." And he does, and he comes in, and she covers him. And what Sisera's doing is he's hiding, knowing that Barak's going to be after him, right? Pick it up at 19. So he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I'm thirsty." So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. And he said to her, "Stand at the opening of the tent, and if any man comes in and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say no." And here's where it gets a little dark. But Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg. And then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. And so he died. So Jael invites him in, covers him up. He says, "Hey, I'm thirsty. I want some water." She goes, "Hey, what about some milk?" You're like, "Oh, she's nice, right? I'll give you water. I'll give you some milk." And then once he's laying there and he falls asleep, she gets a tent peg and she kills Sisera and brings peace and freedom to Israel. She steps into that battle. And she fights. And there's a song, a whole chapter 5 is called is Deborah's Song. And in it, you know whose name gets brought up in glory and remembered? It's not Barak. It's Jael. I remember the first time I read this story, I was in Oregon. You read through things, but really hit home. I was in Oregon, and there's another church planter who had a daughter named Jael. I was like, oh, we're not from the Bible. I go, okay. So I go home that night and read it. I'm like, dang, well, he wants his girl to be tough. I mean, that's what I thought, right? I was like, he named his daughter Jael. Whew, okay. Stay away from her. Like, if that's I'm my daughter's name, I'm showing every boy she ever brings home that story, right? But Jael says, here's what I think we learn from Jael. When it comes to passivity, here's a few things I think we learn from Jael. All right? Number one, we see that Jael comes out of the tent to Sisera. I think we need to go, right? I think when it comes to those opportunities, don't wait on the opportunity always to come and fall in your lap. We live in a culture that's so passive, we're like, okay, I just got to wait for it to happen. No, let's go. Let's go. Let's go after it. When it comes to difficulties, we're like, you know, we just want to be passive, and maybe if I just don't do anything, this will pass me by. Man, just engage in it. Here's the thing. If you're in a difficult situation, God believes you have the strength to walk through that difficult situation. And on the conversation, you know, the conversation you should have, go. Begin those conversations. In fact, the second thing I think we see is that we realize that Jael speaks to Sisera before Sisera speaks to Jael. Jael says, hey, turn in here. Come in here. Right? And this is one of the key points, because I think that Jael is willing to engage in this fight that's not even hers. She's willing to engage knowing that she could save all of Israel. And so she steps out on a limb and speaks to Sisera and invites him into a tent, knowing she's inviting him into a fight to have to take on something that's really difficult and tough. And we as Christians, we need a Christian culture. We need church that is not just out there saying, you know what, maybe people will just get it one day. We need to be engaging in the lostness of our world, reaching people and sharing Christ with them. I mean, I hear it and I get this. I get this, all right? Believe me, I get it. You know, we used to have a culture where it's like people would go to knock on doors and somebody would open the door and goes, hey, can I tell you about Jesus? And we went so the other way that now we started saying, you know what, let's just live out the gospel. And then maybe people will ask us about Jesus. And I think the truth is we're somewhere in between. We have to be ready to engage when God asks us to engage. To not be scared to talk about Jesus when the time comes up, when God gives us opportunity. In fact, the other night, it was after a swim meet. I'm still in swim meet world right now, which is crazy world. It's awesome. You got to love it. But it leads to a lot of late nights where I've not ate anything for like 10 hours. And so it was one of those nights, and my wife needed, we'd run out of pull-ups, so my child needed pull-ups, and I needed sustenance to keep living. And so I decided to go to our local grocery store, you know? And I got a pack of pull-ups as I went in, and I went right around, and there was some like crab salad and some like spicy crackers. And I was like, yes, that's a winner tonight, you know? The dinner of champions. And so I get it, and I'm like walking away from there, and I'm like, I don't know, 10 yards from me, I hear this noise. And a lady going, oh. And I look, I turn around, this lady has fallen. So I set my stuff down, you know, I go over there, I go, you okay? You know, anything I do for you? She's like, my leg hurts, you know, and it was a little moisture there. And I go, okay. She goes, can you help me up? I'm like, sure. So, you know, she wants to do like one hand, and you know, I'm just like, I'm not as strong as you think I am. Let's do the two hand. Let's just make sure, like, I don't want to drop you again. You know, so I'm doing the two hand pickup. Across the arm, structurally sound, like I'm good, let's do this. And as I'm doing that, these two guys walk up, and they're like college guys, like great shape, you know, just one of them's got a man bun and a beard, you know. I'm automatically like, what are you guys doing coming over here, you know, like just making me feel bad about myself tonight. And in their cart, they have three tubs of ice cream, which that's all they've got. They've got a cart with three tubs of ice cream. I've got Pampers and, you know, crab salad. Like, we're just in different worlds, right? And they're like, hey, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, one of you guys go get the manager. And so the buffer of the two guys goes get the manager. And tall, skinny man bun guy stays there with beard. And he's talking, you know. And he's like, hey, you okay, ma'am? She goes, yeah, I think so. And then he just goes, well, can I pray for you? And I tell you, in that moment, I was like, I mean, I was convicted and challenged and encouraged in our culture all at one time. She goes, yeah. She goes, you know, I've been really sick. And like, we sit there and we have prayer. And here's this, here's this frat kid, man bun, college kid. But he decided to engage in that moment. Like, he was willing to risk whatever she might say back to him, whatever she might think of him, whatever, how she might discount him, he was willing to risk any of that to engage in that moment. I can't tell you, that's what we need to do as a church, be willing to risk whatever someone might think of us to engage in the moment God gives us. To engage in the opportunity for the gospel, to engage in the difficult situations, to engage to engage in the opportunities, to engage in the conversations. Let's quit being so passive and let's begin to engage and watch what God does. She engages. Number three, she's very wise. He asks for water. She doesn't give him water. What's she give him? Milk. Why is she giving milk? Because it makes you sleepy. She knew there was something that she, in the moment, planned, I'm going to fight this fight and end this thing. She could have got water, but instead she gave him milk. We engage in the difficulties and the opportunities and the conversations and the gospel for the gospel's sake, and we're living for Christ. We need to be wise. And then lastly, she finished the fight, right? I mean, there's no doubt. Like, it wasn't like, nobody said, do you think Sisera survived that one? No. No. The fight was done. Fight was finished. And we need to finish. There's a scripture that convicts me, and it says that to finish is better than to begin. And I'm afraid that sometimes we have a culture that wants to jump in and try to start something, and we don't want to finish it. And here's the truth about it. Not every finish looks like this one. All right? Not every finish is absolute victory for you. Sometimes the finish is to survive. Sometimes to finish is to hold on to your faith in the midst of it. Sometimes the finish is to take a risk and to totally strike out. But finishing means you see it through. You don't run away. You don't bow out. You finish. Man, we need a culture. We need a Christian culture that's going, that's engaging, that's wise in the middle of the combat, and that's finishing what God's put us in. And when we do that, man, we can change our communities. Change our world. It'll change our lives. There's a movie that came out about a month and a half, 2 months ago. I had to go see it because I'm a comic book nerd from the 90s, okay? It's a little bit, if you go to my basement, my parents' house, you'll see a bunch of comic books. I'm letting you into my nerddom right now, okay? I know that's very nerdy. I don't still buy them, so quit judging me. Some of you are like, oh, he's a comic book guy. But Logan came out, right? And it's the last movie in this Wolverine series who's a comic book character, right? And this little scene has nothing really to do with the context of the movie, but it just struck a chord with me. Logan is riding in a truck with his mentor, a guy named Charles Xavier, okay? And they're just riding down a road, and there's somebody pulled over on the side of the road, like the lid of the hood up, and the truck's broke down, this car's broke down. And Xavier says, Logan, we should stop and help them. And Logan says, somebody will come by and help them. And Xavier says, somebody has. And that just struck a chord with me. How many times we live our lives saying, somebody else will handle this situation. Somebody else will do this. Somebody else will call that single mom and encourage her today. Somebody else will help that family that can't kind of figure it out with groceries or financially. Somebody else can be an example through the midst of this medical issues. Somebody else can fill in this ministry position. Somebody else can teach kids. Somebody else. We just say somebody else, somebody else, somebody else. Man, we're somebody else ourselves to death. We're so passive. And the bottom line this morning is this. What if we would be the someone that someone is waiting for? Let's be the someone that someone is waiting for. See, I believe that whatever situation you're going through, whatever difficulty, you're the someone that God wants to walk through that and show his glory. And that's so much easier for me to say about your situation because I don't know it. And you don't know mine. But I know the ones God's put me in the middle of, though they are horrible sometimes, the difficulties I'm having to deal with, I don't like, they're mine. And somehow God has trusted me to walk through them. I'm the someone that can show him through the midst of my difficulties. Whatever opportunities that lay out there for you, you get to be the someone who seizes it and takes it on and tries it and sees what happens. And for the conversations, you're the someone who can have the conversations with the people that need to hear from you. And we can be the someones who risk it to share the gospel, to every person that needs it. We're the ones. We need to get to a place where we quit looking for somebody else to come and do the very thing that we know we can do. We need to quit saying all the bad things that could happen and trust God. We need to quit trying to make our obedience negotiable and just say, yes, I'll be that someone. And when we do, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I know that we'll leave legacies. And they may not write songs about us, but people's hearts will think of us, and their minds will think of us. And they'll realize, man, that person did something exceptional. I believe we can. And I believe through it all, God gains glory. Let's pray. God.